Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I'm so pleased because, once again, my guest is Dr. Stella Resnick. Stella and I have known each other a very long time. We are friends and colleagues, and she's a mentor of mine, too. So just in time for Valentine's Day, Dr. Stella Resnick returns to this program to discuss romance and more. Welcome to the program, Dr. Stella.
Well, thank you, Dr. Diana. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's just, I'm so glad you're back. You were last here the end of May, and we repeated your program a couple of weeks ago from that time. So your second book, The Heart of Desire, Keys to the Pleasure of Love.
To the pleasures. Pleasures of love.
I should make that plural for sure. Pleasures of love.
Pleasures of love. Plenty
yes.
of pleasures.
And we're going to discuss some of those pleasures of love and what kind of gets in the way for people, because you talk about the love-lust dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
Why is romance so important? I mean, Valentine's Day is coming up, the 14th of February, so that's pretty soon. But why is romance so important, Stella?
Well, it's part of the human mating dance.
Yes.
You know, every species has a way of coming on to a potential partner. The giraffes walk toward each other, their necks swaying, and as they get together, they sway their necks and the necks entwine. That's the giraffe's way. And monkeys have their own way. Even bugs do push-ups. Birds, we know, you know, they have big displays of feathers, and
yeah.
males push their chest out. So we have that, too. Human beings have ways of coming on to each other that begins to release sexual hormones and begins to stimulate the potential partner. Now, we know how to do that when we're single. We know how to, or some people don't, of course. You know, some people never really are allowed to be playful with their sexuality. I never really feel playful with their sex, because there's an element of play there. It's called a dance. It's called a dance, mating dance. So there is a way in which we are playful when we are romantic and we smile at each other. And, you know, we look into each other's eyes. Women flip their hair, and men kind of strut a little bit. And it's fun. It's fun, and it starts the biochemistry that are stimulants, basically, and that turns us on to each other. Well, when people get together and they live together, they start treating each other more like family than
right.
lovers. And so, you know, they become more like brother and sister, or brothers or sisters,
mm-hmm.
or mother and child, or father and child. So when we start to treat each other in parental roles or sibling roles, then naturally we're not going to feel very sexy toward each other. So romance is a way where we treat each other like something other than family, where we become playful with each other, and we recreate, in a sense, that kind of magic that comes with focus and being attentive to each other and making each other feel special and honoring the male and the female within each other. And it's just a way of really stimulating ourselves and getting into the mood for something more.
And you have, in this wonderful book that's a follow-up to a best-selling book, it's still, I'm still recommending it to clients. It's so excellent.
Still doing well.
Yes, I know. Pleasure Zone. And, geez, we talked about that in 19...
98, 99 when I had the radio.
97 actually.
I know it was published then, but we talked about it on my radio show in Hawaii when you and your adorable husband were visiting, and that was fun. And it's just it's such an important book, as is this second one. And we're of course focusing on the program today on your second book.
Mm-hmm. And the second book is really strictly about love and sex. It's about really being able to have physical intimacy, not just sexual, but affection and expressions of love and being romantic toward each other, of course, is a critical aspect. And that differentiates your partner, somebody that you love, from family, whom you also love but wouldn't be sexual with.
Now, you write in the book that feelings of love can kill the libido, and this is, in fact, the love-lust dilemma. We're going to get into solutions for this, but can you talk a bit about the this phenomenon, which it happens to so many? I mean, you and I are both therapists, and we just see this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, you know, there are many good reasons for this to happen. What interests me is what can we do instead? You know, we're here to talk about romance, and there's a reason why romance is such an important part of that, and that's because it's about play. You can't be romantic without being playful. And what happens to a lot of couples is they stop being playful with each other. They stop being able to focus on what they enjoy about the other and being sensual with the other and sensuous. And they get more into being domestic partners. And, well, you know, that kills the sex drive. You have to be willing to set aside the domestic engineering of your life.
Well, that's a good way to put it, yes.
And to get into the joy of life. Now, a lot of people really don't make a lot of room for the joy in their life because they think if they are strictly focused on pleasurable interaction, and I'm not talking about pleasure that is strictly escapist, you know, getting drunk or even getting too high to function, you know, or, you know, watching TV all the time. I'm talking about being playful in a way that enriches you as a person and enriches the couple, the two people who love each other. So it takes setting aside time to be with your partner in a loving, sensual, playful, affectionate way, relating to each other. And it's not about talking about our relationship, you know, which can get so tedious and boring. You know, I'm willing to do that with my clients, you know, as long as when we start talking about the relationship, that we get more into what can be done instead rather than what's wrong with us. You know, it's, well, what's wrong doesn't give as much information as what will make this better. And one of the ways to get better with a partner, no matter how good it is, it can always be better, is to honor the lovely parts of your partner. Now, of course, you know I'm saying that, but as I say, the therapist in me says, well, you know, what if you're really angry with your partner? Well, you got to deal with that, of course.
And that's why we often have to do, as therapists, we often have to do some psychotherapy before we can do sex therapy. Because if they're really angry with each other, it's not going to make much room for
what
the loving feelings.
Is so critical. That is so important. And that's what I teach. You know, I have trainees, and I'm always teaching. therapist.
And you're so good. I've been in some of your workshops. And let me just interrupt to tell people your website is drstellaresnick.com, drstellaresnick, R-E-S-N-I-C-K.com. And that'll be up on the PRN website with a description of today's program. You do lots of trainings. You educate.
I do.
Very important. Even with our clients, that's an important part.
Exactly. It's so important to help people get a different mindset of what is a relationship. What is a thriving relationship? You know, I'm doing another workshop that I've just labeled Thriving in Relationship in Word and Deed, Heart and Desire.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Very nice. I like that.
Yes, in Word and Deed, Heart and Desire.
Because mm-hmm.
we really do need to know that our words are so important. I've had couples come in with issues, and they relate back to something someone said maybe 20, 30 years ago that still lays on their heart. Even though the partner has asked for forgiveness for saying it. So people hold on to grudges, you know, that's another thing. But words are so important. And how we treat the other, you know, we can be polite with strangers. I know are polite with strangers, but impolite, dismissive, even sometimes nasty with their partner because they seem to think that's what intimacy is about. When you're intimate, didn't they say decades ago, when you're in love, you don't have to say you're sorry? Well, that's, you know, it's a bunch of baloney, of course.
It is.
You step on somebody's toes, metaphorically, you say you're sorry, whether that person is somebody that you see every day or if that person is a complete stranger, you apologize. People don't apologize enough. Sometimes things are said in haste or in anger and you regret it afterwards. We need to be able to apologize to one another. We need to be able to treat the other in a respectful, loving way. Some people just don't know how to do that because they come from families where they witness people not treating each other respectfully. And so when they get tense in a relationship, they pull out that old habit that's, you know, that they've been programmed with, and it's a knee-jerk reaction, and that's something that people need to learn how to get over. And the way you get over a bad habit is to learn a new habit that is better.
Exactly.
That is better. And a new habit that is better we call a skill. A skill.
Yes.
So a skill... something that draws a positive response, more of what you're wanting from the other, that learning skills is what enable us to grow in a relationship. And if you are in a growing relationship, that's the best thing in the world because you have a partner who adores you.
I am so glad that PRN is archiving this show, as they do all of the shows, because you are so wise, and no wonder you've been a mentor to me. You've always been about positive things and pleasure, and that's what your first book was about, to not pathologize everything. But, yes, I mean, this is very important that you learn new habits, a skill, and you not only talk about words, which often get so muddled up from our families of origin and all these bad examples we had, but you also talk about the body-mind connection and gestalt games for couples.
Mm-hmm.
And they're described in your book, The Heart of Desire. You trained, go back a little bit and talk about your training and the gestalt.
Well, I trained with Fritz Perls and Laura Perls. They were the founders of Gestalt Therapy. And Gestalt Therapy was a way of focusing on what's taking place in the present moment. So it doesn't mean that there's no past and there's no future. It just means that when you're in the moment, there are times when you're re-experiencing the past and the pain of the past.
Yes.
But the past is present. And what you want to be able to do is evolve that. You want to be able to learn ways to finish unfinished business from the past so that you can be responsive to what's taking place in the present moment without being prejudiced by past pain and having everything, you know, just keep bringing up old stuff. So I learned a wonderful way of working from Fritz and from Laura and from all the Gestalt groups that I've done, you know, at Esalen, and I worked with a number of different greats in the field in Gestalt. And what I've done is taken what I've learned in Gestalt to another level so that it's not just Gestalt. It's not just a way of working in the present, which it is that too, but it's also about understanding a new way of being. So there's a new model of how to be that has to do with being present with somebody and being able to describe what your experience is rather than talking from your head, you know, to be able to be present, to be able to reduce stress. That's such an important part of all this, because so often what happens is that something triggers us and we react in a stressful, painful way from the past. Something brings up the past and we react from that. And if we can be in the present moment, which is the major part of Gestalt, is to be able to recognize what is taking place within yourself in the present moment. What old thoughts, old images, memories, what do you say to yourself? What is the emotion in your body? Where do you feel it? Do you feel it in your throat, in a lump, or in a grip? Do you feel your chest getting heavy? Do you feel a knot in your gut? Do you feel that in your belly? Do you have butterflies? All of those bodily reactions then create an impetus to act in a particular way that may be counterproductive. So we want to be able to observe ourselves in the present moment. And, of course, in order to do that, we can't be reactive. We can't just react like knee-jerk reactions. We really need to take a few deep breaths and be present in our bodies, feel what's going on. And then rather than do something that will be against what we say we want, like love and appreciation and respect, we want to be able to choose how we respond. And that's where learning new ways of doing things comes in.
Beautifully articulated, and again, very important. What is your principle of relaxed excitement? Because it seems to me that that's part of this.
That's part of everything.
Yeah, it's part of everything. And I know you said, last April we had a Quad S meeting in Los Angeles, and you talked about relaxed excitement being the key to success in everything.
In everything.
Could you expand on that a little bit? Yes, that would be very interesting, because I think this is an amazing concept if people could only get it.
Great. Well, you get it by practicing it.
Right, by practicing.
The principle of relaxed excitement is essentially that no matter what it is that we're feeling, whether we're feeling anxious or angry or feeling good, what we want to be able to do is not only feel that energy, that arousal of energy, but to be able to relax into it. If you can relax into your excitement, then you can choose how you want to respond to something. So that the principle of relaxed excitement is to relax into your excitement. Now, even during difficult times, you know, if you feel that energy building of fear, for example, and you take a few deep breaths, those deep breaths enable you to have a wider perspective on the issue, because when you're in fear, you have tunnel vision. The brain doesn't want to know what the opportunities are. The brain only wants to know where there is a potential for threat and danger. So you have tunnel vision. What you're looking for is, where's the danger? And so you neglect to see where the opportunities are. When it comes to sex, the principle of relaxed excitement is about, as you get turned on, the more you get turned on, you don't want to get into what the movies depict as sex. Most movies have the worst sex. When a sex scene comes on where they're frantic, they're just frantic. They start to get frantic with each other, and they start to rip at each other's clothing, and somebody gets thrown against a wall, and boom, 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 and then it's over before it starts, and then they're, you know, huffing and puffing, and I'm so embarrassed to look at that. I'm embarrassed for the director, I'm embarrassed for the actors, I'm embarrassed for everybody sitting there and having to look at this really bad sex as though it's the greatest thing in the world. So, you know, what really makes for hot sex is, as your excitement starts to build, you start to breathe into it, and you get into your senses, and you kiss, and you hug, and you touch each other, and you stroke each other, and you smile at each other, and you say nice things to each other. And as you're doing that, what's happening is that your blood vessels, your heart and your blood vessels and all of your organs are beginning to open and relax. Mm. When they open and relax, then energy can flow throughout your entire body, and your entire body is getting turned on. And when your entire body gets turned on, that's the ultimate pleasure sexually, and it engages the heart. So you're not only feeling sexual from the waist down, but you're feeling energy in from the waist up in your chest. Your heart is open.
In your heart. And you talk about you're containing. This is about containing and building excitement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I see you read my book. Thank you.
You're welcome. I've also heard you lecture, and it's always a pleasure. I continue to learn from you, Stella.
Thank you so much.
You know, don't you appreciate that you have been, you are a mentor to so many? I mentioned this when we did the program last May, but, you know, I pulled out notes I took from one of your lectures in 1992, for goodness sakes, at a Quad S meeting.
Yes. So, yes, I'm getting on in years.
Well, I am too. But,
yes,
you know,
all of us who were alive back then are still alive. And
better than the alternative, as they say.
What's
but
that?
It's better than the alternative, as
it's
they say.
It's better than, right.
You know, if we live long enough, we're going to all experience older age. And if we can keep a good attitude, and I think, just to bring this in, that if we remain sexual, what a difference it makes. Because we can feel so alive, and we can feel so much pleasure. It makes all the difference.
Yes, and it's also important to reframe that whole notion of what is sexual, because a lot of people, when you start to talk about sex, they are immediately thinking about intercourse.
I know that, yeah.
And sex is so much more than intercourse, particularly mm-hmm. for so many couples. Intercourse is the end of sex. Mm-hmm. Once they get into having intercourse,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, boom, 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 somebody may have an orgasm, and that will end the sex. And for a lot of people, you know, that only lasts about 5 to 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, nothing special. I mean, you know, birds do it in 3 seconds. What's the big deal? But
we're not birds.
We're not birds, and there we are. You know, we're doing the human equivalent of boom, boom.
Yeah. And
if you can really see that sexuality is about connection, and it's about being connected mostly without words. So it's the first contact is with the eyes. And kissing is such an important part. Kissing and holding and breathing together, that's a critical part of sex that, you know, in the frantic sex in the movies, you don't see anything of. You see one kiss and boom, you know, the clothes start getting shattered. But to be able to look into each other's eyes and to kiss each other, you know, kissing is so important because in the kiss we actually swap our biochemistry with one another.
That's right.
Testosterone and dopamine and serotonin in our saliva.
Mm-hmm.
So kissing is an important part of it, but I, you know, we wanted to talk about romance today, and romance is so important because it is playful, because it is a way of interacting with one another. And, you know, one of the ways of just getting romantic is putting on some music that turns you on.
Mm-hmm,
and putting on some clothes that you like to wear. You know, one of the things that singles do that works is that they get dressed up for each other. Now,
yeah.
It may not be, you know, a formal gown and tuxedo, but they dress in a way that makes them look good for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out together, and they take their time in being playful and looking into each other's eyes and kissing and playing footsies, you know. And that's part of romance, to be playful with each other and to even dress in a way that makes you feel sexy. And, you know, it doesn't have to be anything really elaborate. For me, it's just an old not so old T-shirt, you know, nice long little T-shirt, some leggings,
mm-hmm.
high heels. You know, I have have shoes in the house I only wear for my husband. And long earrings.
Long earrings. Yes.
You know, and that enables me to be playful because I'm in costume.
Right, and playing out. Oh, we've come to the half hour. We're going to continue this talk about playfulness and dressing up and playing music and all the elements of romance as we head toward Valentine's Day. But, of course, we should be doing this a lot more than on Valentine's Day. And that's
exactly.
Yeah, so we'll talk about it when we come back from the break. Stay with us, please. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I'm here with Dr. Stella Resnick, a dear friend and a brilliant therapist, sex therapist, author. She has written her newest book is The Heart of Desire, and her former books, you can still get that at Amazon.com, is The Pleasure Zone, Why We Resist Good Feelings and How to Let Go and Be Happy. We were talking just before the break about romance, and Stella was talking about playing music and dressing up and playing footsies, and you know, we can tie this back to your book because you've got these gestalt games for couples, hugging and staying there
and loving and appreciating each other. And talk a little bit more about that, or under the heading of romance and your book and the Gestalt games.
Okay. Now, as I'm hearing you talk about this, I'm realizing that one of the things that when I was saying that, I was really focusing on what makes us want to make love, you know, to get playful. But there's a whole lot that is involved with being romantic with one another that is not necessarily sexual per se. It has to do with having a relationship with someone where you feel like you're in love, that you don't just love your companion, but that there's a little spark there of enthusiasm for your partner that has a sexual component, but also has that quality of feeling in love with your partner. What makes you feel that kind of magic with your partner, that this is not just an old shoe, but there is something that is continually being renewed in this relationship? And that's a kind of romantic love that has been studied and has been shown to be present in long-term couples. So it's not just that people fall in love and feel this kind of romance for one another, and then when they commit to one another and they move in, that necessarily that kind of romantic feeling disappears. So there are studies that have shown that there are long-term couples who have feelings of romantic love toward one another. And I talk about these studies in my book. And what they show is that when long-term couples have feelings of being romantic to one another, that is the most fulfilling kind of intimate relationship, when there's some of that magic still there.
The magic.
So what I've looked at in that particular chapter on romance and desire, what I've looked at is what are some of the elements of that kind of love, that kind of romantic love that is more than companionate love, in a relationship that continues over time. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, when you make love and you're what's being stimulated is not just from the waist down but from the waist up in your heart, that is a very fulfilling way to make love. And, you know, when you have an orgasm, you also have a heartgasm. You can feel the love in your heart.
Yes.
So what does it take to have that kind of romance? And that's not about playing dress up, and it's not even about being sexual or sensual. It's about a quality of connection, emotional connection, that has to do with being open to one another, that all your interactions are not necessarily scripted. You know, that if you hug, you hug gently and you pat each other on the back. Or the way you talk to each other, that there are things that you can't say to your partner because they may take offense. So you're careful not to arouse a feeling of offense from your partner. So you have to be careful the way you talk. And these are scripted. You know, that's a way of being with your partner that's scripted. What are unscripted? Unscripted means that you talk to one another more spontaneously, that you share things with one another, and you can share deeper things. And it's also a way of being focused on one another. That, you know, so many times when people are in the middle of raising children, for example, mm-hmm. most of their interactions are shoulder to shoulder. They're co-parenting, or they're doing something together, or they're sitting on the couch watching TV, but it's shoulder to shoulder. One of the critical aspects of being able to have a feeling of a romantic love with your partner is to be face-to-face with your partner.
Oh, indeed.
And mm-hmm. face-to-face and heart-to-heart, and being able to share with one another in a non-threatening or non-threatened way, and to focus on the other person, to share, yes, as friends, but also to be able to share to be attentive, to be focused on the other, to set aside time for one another. Also, another critical aspect of being romantic with your partner is getting out of the house.
Absolutely, because the brain produces
somewhere in a restaurant, or go together to a park and sit on a bench and talk to each other while you're looking at the trees and the birds.
Mm-hmm.
But to have dates that where you're really focused on one another and being playful with one another, but in a new way, not just going to a movie and going out to dinner, but you know, creating some newness and novelty in your relationship so you have a new experience of the other. So these are all the kinds of ways of being romantic with your partner that contributes to your sex life, but it also contributes to your overall love life with your partner.
I'm hoping that new parents will listen to this program, because it's so easy to put sex off when you're just so exhausted and busy with children.
Well, you want to get out of, you know, you have to think of sex in a broader way.
Yeah.
Talk a lot about broadening your erotic spectrum.
Yes,
and that
you
means
do.
That, mm-hmm. that sex is more than penis vagina sex. You know, it's more mm-hmm. than genital. It's really about all the other organs. It's about your eyes and your nose, you know,
mm-hmm.
smelling each other and tasting each other and touching each other and rubbing up against each other and whispering sweet nothings into each other's ears. You feel so good. I love the way you're touching me. Oh, you really turn me on. Oh, you feel so great. You know, to sing.
Very nicely done. Stella.
I'm a pro with
I'm sure Alan, your husband, appreciates this a lot.
Well, we both do, you know.
Of course.
He's a little bit more inhibited than I am, but he's learned, you know.
Well, I mean, you've been together quite a long time now, and
30
years. And you keep it hot.
Yeah.
You know, that's really commendable and admirable.
We keep it fun. We, you know, even, you know, during difficult times, we always take time to be fun with each other and to be
and to play
each other and to squeeze each other's butts and
yes. I can relate. I don't have as long a relationship, but it's good. It has those elements in it and it is fun. And you get all this playful energy and connection.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, you know, at least some of the time. I mean, you can't be out of touch with reality either. But, you know, to just have little islands of pleasure. And to, you know, to play music and dim the lights and sit together and neck. You know, even if it's just from the neck up, it doesn't matter. It's all about connection. It's all about being physical. It's all about getting your juices flowing. and being loving with your partner and generous. You know, this
and
what
generous.
I'm talking about is having a spirit of generosity with one another, where you really want to give pleasure to your partner, and you
mm-hmm.
want to help them to relax and to you know, to dote on each other, to
mm-hmm.
dote on each other a little
mm-hmm.
bit. You know,
mm-hmm.
make each other feel cherished and
cherished.
You know, that's so important.
It sure is. Cherished is a beautiful word too. It's a more old-fashioned word, but if we can make each other feel cherished, sometimes with couples that I see in therapy, I end with a little exercise that I call sweet nothings, and where they just say to each other, taking about 3 minutes, one at a time, looking at each other, knee to knee, holding hands, positive, loving things that they want to tell each other. And I've had some couples, for the first time doing this, tear up, men too,
yes.
because they have been so negative. And to hear these positives, what they really appreciate about the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It is so important because, you know, couples forget to do that. They get into their parents' roles. They get into what they would
mm-hmm.
their parents do, and
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of their parents didn't know how to pleasure each other. So, you know, when we talk about Gestalt games are basically ways of being with one another that are, they're like exercises of being in the present moment with the other person that you learn to enjoy one another and to play with new kinds of behaviors. So some of the new behaviors that I have people learn to do, one is say what you most love and appreciate about the other. And I have the couples taking turns with one another. So first one person says, what I most love and appreciate about you is this. And that person speaks until they finish and
mm-hmm.
without interruption. And then the other person does that. So that's one aspect of it. I also encourage them to tell the story about how they first met and fell in love with each other.
Oh, and, that's lovely, yes.
And that's so critical, too, because I was once working with a couple that were so tense with each other. It was a gay couple, a lesbian couple.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had a lot of anger toward each other. And so I said, and I didn't know, you know, I looked at them, and I didn't know what to do with them because they had so much going on. And
mm-hmm.
what came out of my mouth blew my mind. I said to them, tell me how you met and fell in love.
Good, yeah.
And they got into that, they started to remind themselves of what they most loved about. And everything turned around from that moment on to be able to share the story of your love. That's what romance is. A romance is a story. And then
yes.
you know, to be able to have a love affair with your partner. And that's where I say, you know, get out of the house, you know, meet for a drink or on a park bench or go somewhere to walk or do something that would be special, you know, to one of you, and then you do something that's special to the other one, you know, or you buy an inexpensive gift for your partner and you tell your partner what made you think of them when you saw that made you want to have that for them. Or, you know, certainly going to a hotel for a romantic evening or go out for a weekend, that's always interesting. And then to have a romantic evening at home, you know, instead of having to go out, get dressed in what feels comfortable for you, but you know, attractive. And one of you or both of you create a lovely, elaborate meal together and, you know, have flowers and candlelight and music. And maybe one of you plays host, and then the next time the other of you plays host. or, you know, just having some fun with each other. I have some games here. I talk about arm wrestling. And that the one who cares more about winning should always win. you know, sit facing each other, take a few deep breaths, and now take turns telling each other a joke. And
that's fun.
You know, but and also that romance is self-disclosure, and this is a little bit goes a little deeper to reveal something new about yourself to your partner. Something that you haven't spoken about before. And if your partner doesn't respond as you hoped that he or she would, ask for what you want. Say what you were hoping for. And always ask nicely. You know, I always tell people, always ask for what you want, always ask nicely, and be willing to take no for an answer, because otherwise you're controlling. And, you know, and lie in each other's arms and just breathe together and feel blessed to have each other. You know, I mean, there are so many things that people can do to break out of their old patterns of being ma and pa kettle with each other. You know, and to rediscover what it was that they initially fell in love with, because that person is still there. That person that you fell in love with is still in there, and help each other find that part of yourselves again.
Oh my goodness, this is profound, Stella, and I just really hope that people are listening and maybe even taking notes.
Well, they can always get it on the archives, can't they?
Well, exactly, and your advice applies across the board. And I know that you talk about it in your book too, that it doesn't matter the age. I mean, you have people in their late 20s and 30s who haven't even been together that long that feel the loss of desire. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's a little more common with people that have been together for years, and they have the love, but they don't have the libido. But these are all really good suggestions for how to break out of the rut.
Yeah, and it's all about play.
It's all about play.
All about play, because play is energizing.
It is
energizing without being at risk. You know, when you play a game, you're playing ball, you're running, or you're catching, or you're jumping up and down, or you're dancing, or you're singing, you know, there's an excitement and enthusiasm that fills you,
mm-hmm.
and it's active, it activates you, mm-hmm. and that's what we need. We want to be activated, we want to be energized, and when you're energized, you know, a lot of good things happen, and it stimulates the brain, and it stimulates your thought, and it stimulates your heart, and it stimulates all parts of you, and that's a good thing, and it's good for your personal health, physical health, mental health, and the health of a relationship. Play, that's
play, and of course, some people don't know how to play.
And they
come out of families of origin where everything was very serious and feelings were not taken seriously or encouraged as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So that
causes pain. You know, if you stop everything up, if you stop energy, if you, you know, it clogs the energy channels. So, you know, it's about being expressive. It's not about denying your pain, but it's about moving it through you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to stay in a painful place. You know, you express it. You know, spit it out. Express. If you express it in a way that your partner can hear you, if you're not blaming your partner, but if you allow yourself to express your feelings and your partner can be there to hug you and embrace you and stroke you and comfort you, and he or she can only do that if you're not blaming them. You know, if you're
exactly.
You know, then
the blaming puts the other person on the defensive, and then that usually
they can't help you. Then they can't give you the love and support that you need.
Communication, yes.
And so, you know, that's why you know, the other part of all this is generosity. You know, to be generous with your partner, to want to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us are walking around feeling begrudged, you know, feeling like we didn't get what we wanted, and so, you know, we hold a lot of people in our debt. They owe us. This person owes us, and this person owes us, and my partner owes me, you know. And it comes a time when you want to cancel the debt. You want to cancel the debt that your parents weren't perfect. You know, they were just, you know, Joe and Jill Schmo, and that's
and maybe doing the best they knew how to do, given the givens, given their own family
and
of origin.
I mean, I think you were fortunate. You came from a loving family, I know, Diana. And
I was fortunate. I count my blessings all the time for that.
Yeah, and I didn't have that good fortune.
I know, Stella, but look at what you've accomplished.
Right. I had
what
to,
you've
I
overcome.
Learned how to do it, you know.
Yes.
I had to pull myself up by the bootstraps.
It helped that you married a man who came out of a family that was that showed secure attachment.
Yes.
So
then
you got what you call earned attachment.
But you know, before I met him, I was with a lot of other guys who came from similar kinds of deficient backgrounds, and I had a lot of tumultuous relationships that were very passionate, very angry, very sexual, very painful, and you know, a lot of relationships that ended. But I loved every one of them.
Well, sure, and actually, for some of our younger listeners who are dating, actually getting some therapy could be useful, or at any age.
Well, that's
why are you attracted to some of these risky people?
Yeah,
these dangerous,
you know,
risky people.
To learn how to be in a loving relationship, and even when I met Alan, you know, he wasn't my type. He wasn't my type.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at him like, what does this guy want from me? You know, he's not my type. Oh, well, of course he's not my type. He was too sweet. He was too kind. He was too thoughtful. He was too nice, you know. And my type was somebody I could fight with. And so I
hear my best. Been together all these years, Stella. Progressive Radio Network really likes for us to stop a few minutes before the top of the hour. So I'm going to do that by thanking you again and letting our listeners know that they need to visit your website. They can even download the first chapter of your most recent book.
Yes, at Amazon.com. They can get
the older book.
There's a lot of information on my website.
Yeah, there, and so drstellaresnick.com. And Stella, this has been such an enlightening program and fun. I always love speaking to you.
Ditto, I love speaking with you too, Dr.
Yeah.
Diana.
Thank you, Dr. Stella. And I'd like to do this again without 5 months or 6 months being in between. Can we do that? Because there's so much more to talk about.
Of course. I always love talking with you, Diana.
All right. Thanks, Stella.
Thank
and every,
you.
Everybody, next week, Nina Hartley, who's been in porn for years, but we're going to talk about women in porn. So it'll be a little different. But please tune in. Bye, Stella. Bye, everybody. Thank you.